Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the state of Florida for once again taking action to undermine everything we stand for. The Florida Board of Governors, which oversees all the public colleges and universities in the Gunshine State, officially ended the requirement that students take sociology courses in order to receive their undergraduate degrees. Yes, a truly sad day, I know. Their justification for this heinous act of intellectual discrimination was the claim that sociology courses were not advancing objective, neutral instruction, but had drifted into promoting leftist, liberal, woke ideologies. Well, of course they had. That was the whole intent of the sociology department from the beginning. All you're telling us is that it's been working. Much like social work, psychology, communications, literature, English, and pretty much every other humanities course, the entire idea was to pretend to be teaching neutral objective truths while actually reshaping all these brainwashed students from conservative homes into dutiful little Marxists and Leninists. I mean, this is far more obvious when you look at gender studies, queer studies, black studies, and the like, but we had done a good job of rebranding when we started referring to the other progressive indoctrination fields as social sciences, counterfeiting on the credibility of, you know, actual sciences like chemistry and physics. But if Florida students no longer have a general re-education requirement like sociology, how will they learn to believe in critical race theory, understand intersectionality, hate America, feel white guilt, see the violence inherent in the system, grasp systemic oppression, and become good little feminist man-haters? Obviously, for now, we can still get them to abandon their naive Christian beliefs and love of America through coursework in philosophy, anthropology, and history. But that's just the tearing down phase of our college indoctrination protocols. You still have to build them back up into effective social justice warriors who are immune to the siren song of capitalism, limited government, and biblical theology. And without sociology to do this, the programming will simply not be complete. But for now, at least there's always grad school. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we want to take a moment to bask in the success of Monday's International Cli-Fi Day festivities. Every April 20th is set aside to celebrate the important genre of climate fiction, which is writing that explores themes around man-made damage to the planet and climate apocalypticism. It's so important to foster literary creativity around plots that not only scare new people into joining our movement to save our dear mother Gaia from the ravages of climate change, but also reinvigorates our own fears of the coming ice age or fire age or whatever catastrophe we're promoting this week. Yes, strategically injecting scary new climate buzz terms like heat dome or polar vortex or bomb cyclone into the ordinary weather conversation has been a very effective tool for increasing climate alarmism. But we can always do more. And the fictional authors who devote their plots and characters to exploring the nuances of terrifying weather are not only making money from their fear-mongering, but they're doing us all a favor by raising awareness of the fight we're in. At this year's Cli-Fi celebration, we heard an excerpt from Henrietta Stoutfern's excellent novella, The Fires of Man Burn Hottest, about a deadly mishap at a poorly maintained coal plant. We heard selections from Philippa Yeager's off-Broadway play, The Iceman Cometh Not, about the terrifying nexus between increasing global temperatures and male impotence. And Judith Rees-Amalfi actually came here and read from her masterpiece of climate romance fiction, Doing Right by Going Left, a heartwarming but not planet-warming story about Kate, a big city lawyer who returns home to help rescue her aging grandmother's small-scale urban hemp farm and falls in love with Jim, the local owner of a medical marijuana dispensary. Together, they advance the cause of climate justice in their small New England town by banning plastic straws and gas-powered leaf blowers, all while finding love. It's so touching. Yes, Cli-Fi 2026 was a raging success with over 17 attendees, although local media made it seem as if there were more like 50 or 100. But a wonderful reminder of the power of fiction to inspire and terrify us. Remember, when you can't get enough fear and horror in your normal news, there's always apocalyptic climate fiction. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, this week's handcrafted ceramic lute of justice, 6 patchouli oil scratch and sniffs, goes to the Southern Poverty Law Center as they suffer through the atrocious attacks of He Who Shall Never Be Named's Department of Justice. The DOJ this week convinced a weak-minded grand jury to issue an indictment against the SPLC for wire fraud, false statements, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. They claim the SPLC, whose core mission is to oppose extremism, fight for racial justice, combat white supremacy, and identify hate groups, paid $3 million over 9 years to informants who were members of the hate groups they were fighting. The documents indicate the SPLC paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to members of the Ku Klux Klan, United Klans of America, Unite the Right, the National Alliance, the Aryan Nations, and the American Nazi Party for information about the activities of these groups and to promote racism and even engage in criminal activity as a mechanism for fundraising to combat the very activities they were financially encouraging. Some recipients were already members and some were infiltrators sent by the SPLC. In one case in particular, an agent called F-37 was paid $270,000 as a member of the online leadership chat group that planned the 2017 Unite the Right event in Charlottesville, Virginia, which injured more than 60 people and killed one with a car ramming. F-37 made racist posts about the rally, attended the event, and even facilitated transportation for other attendees, all with the SPLC's guidance and funding. And they did this all secretly through fraudulently managed bank accounts so the payments would not be known to their donors or to banks. Now look, obviously we aren't mad at the SPLC for paying racists to make it seem like racism is more of a problem than it really is. No, we're mad at the SPLC for getting caught paying racists to make it seem like racism is more of a problem than it really is. But our anger that they got caught pales in comparison with the jubilation we experienced at seeing the successful outcomes of their efforts. Yes, we know it looks like hypocrisy for the SPLC to pay the leader of the American Nazi Party $70,000 while also listing him as an extremist on their website, literally raising funds to fight against him while paying him off with those funds. But that's only because you've forgotten that being hypocritical isn't a problem for us. We say one thing and do something else all the time. We know it seems weird to raise money to fight racism and then turn around and pay that money to racists to make racism worse, but that's only because you don't understand counter double backflip reverse psychology activism. It's psyops and false flag activism all rolled into one giant bundle of fraudulent fundraising. Saul Alinsky would be so proud. You see, it's totally okay to pay money to make racism seem worse than it seems because it really is worse than it seems. After all, it's so hard these days to actually catch a racist in the act of racism. So it's a much better strategy to pay to create a racist episode. That way we know where to show up and film it, so we can then show people how bad the racism is. For years, critics have said the SPLC was wrong in identifying organizations like the Family Research Council and the Babylon Bee as hate groups. But this proves they were right. What better way to be sure a group is fostering extremism than by paying them to foster extremism? Total vindication. But just think about the numbers for a moment. For every dollar spent artificially inflaming extremism and white supremacy, the SPLC can show they were able to generate between $23 and $56 in donations raised, meaning it was a damn good investment. Plus, think of all the self-congratulatory sentiments experienced by the people who donated this money. And if you really want to talk about payoff, how many times did President Biden leverage the Charlottesville, Virginia incident in his campaign speeches as the reason he was running? Uncle Joe repeatedly said that this incident made him decide to come out of retirement to defeat the unnameable one and win back the presidency. And how much was that worth to us? And since the SPLC actively helped facilitate that event, you could even say they bought the presidency with their brilliant counter-double-backflip-reverse-psychology activism program. The CIA manipulating foreign elections and destabilizing governments has nothing on the SPLC. So kudos to you, Southern Poverty Law Center, for creative fundraising, working to inflame racism so you can then fight racism, like setting fires that you can then get paid to put out, and for showing us that the best way to start a revolution is to actually start a revolution, and then start another revolution to fight the revolution you already helped to start. It's really brilliant, and it certainly paid you a lot of money over the years while doing so much to destroy the social fabric of American civil society. Well done. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.